to be cursed by it. You said, I had it in my power to free myself of any curse, that curses were preludes to blessings. Dee winked. Then you told me to cut it off. My hair. That's right. But you wouldn't. No. Luz closed her eyes as the cool mist of a cloud washed over her, its condensation tickling her skin. She was suddenly inexplicably sad. I wouldn't. I wasn't ready to. Well, Dee said, I certainly like how you've styled your hair since you've come to your senses. Look. Daniel pointed to where the cloud floor fell away like a cliff. We're here. They descended into Avignon. The sky above the town was clear, with no clouds to interrupt their view. The sun cast shadows of the angel's wings onto the small medieval village of stone buildings, bordered by verdant pastures of farmland. Cows loafed below them. A tractor threaded through land. They banked left and flew over a horse stable, breathing in the dank stench of hay and manure. They swooped low over a cathedral made from the same tawny stone as most of the buildings in the town. Tourists sipped coffees in a cheerful cafe. The town glowed golden in the midday sun. The startled sense of arriving so quickly mingled with a feeling of time slipping through Luce's fingers. They had been searching for the relics for 4.5 days. Half the time before Lucifer's fall would be upon them was up.
That's where we are going.
Daniel pointed to a bridge on the outskirts that did not extend fully across the shimmering river winding through the town. It was as if half the bridge had crumbled into the water.
Pont Saint-Benizet.
What happened to it? Luce asked. Daniel glanced over his shoulder.
Remember how quiet Annabelle got when I mentioned we were coming here? She inspired the boy who built that bridge in the Middle Ages, in the time when the popes lived here, and not in Rome. He noticed her flying across the Rhone one day, when she didn't think anyone could see her. He built the bridge to follow her to the other side.
When did it collapse?
Slowly, over time, one arch would fall into the river. Then another. Arian says the boy, his name was Benizet, had a vision for angels, but not for architecture. Annabelle loved him. She stayed in Avignon as his muse until he died. He never married, kept apart from the rest of Avignon society. The town thought he was crazy.
Luce tried not to compare her relationship with Daniel to what Annabelle had had with Benizet, but it was hard not to. What kind of a relationship could an angel and a mortal really have? Once all this was over, if they beat Lucifer, then what? Would she and Daniel go back to Georgia and be like any other couple, going out for ice cream on Fridays after a movie? Or would the whole town think she was crazy, like Benizet? Was it all just hopeless? What would become of them in the end? Would their love vanish like a medieval bridge's arches? The idea of sharing a normal life with an angel was what was crazy. She sensed that in every moment Daniel flew her through the sky. And yet she loved him more each day. They landed on the bank of the river, under the shade of a weeping willow tree, sending a flock of agitated ducks flapping into the water. In broad daylight, the angels folded in their wings. Luce stood behind Daniel to watch the intricate process as his retracted into his skin. They drew in from the center first, making a series of soft snaps as layers of muscle folded on imperial feathers. Last came Daniel's thin, nearly translucent wingtips, which glowed as they disappeared inside his body, leaving no trace on a specially tailored T-shirt. They walked to the empty bridge, like any other tourists interested in architecture. Annabelle walked much more stiffly than normal, and Luce saw Arian reach out and touch her hand. The sun was bright, and the air smelled like lavender and river water. The bridge was made of big white stones, held up by long arches underneath.
There was a small stone chapel with a single tower attached along one side, near the entrance of the bridge. It held a sign that read, Chapelle de Saint-Nicolas. Luce wondered where the real tourists were. The chapel was coated with a fine silvery dust. They walked the bridge silently, but Luce noticed that Annabelle wasn't the only one upset. Daniel and Roland were trembling, keeping well clear of the entrance to the chapel, and Luce remembered they were forbidden to enter a sanctuary of God. Dee ran her fingers over the narrow brass railing with a heavy sigh. We are too late. This isn't... Luce touched the dust. It was insubstantial and light, with a hint of silver shimmer, like the dust that had covered her parents' backyard. You mean...
Angels have died here.
Roland's voice was a monotone as he stared into the river. But, Luce stammered, we don't know whether Gabby and Cam and Molly even made it here.
This used to be a beautiful place, Annabelle said. Now they've marred it forever. Je m'excuse, Benizé.
That was when Arion held up a quivering silver feather. Gabby's pennon, intact, so it must have been taken by her own hand. Perhaps to give to an outcast who didn't get it before. She looked away, holding the feather to her chest. But I thought the scale didn't kill angels, Luce said.
They don't.
Daniel bent down and wiped away some of the dust that was mounded like snow at his feet. Something was buried underneath it. His fingers found a dusty silver starshot. He wiped it on his shirt, and Luce shivered each time his fingers drew near the deadly dull tip. At last, he held it out for the others to examine. It was branded with an ornate letter Z.
The elders, Arion whispered.
They are happy to kill angels, Daniel said softly. In fact, there's nothing they'd rather do. There was a sharp crack.
Luce whipped around, expecting... she didn't know what. Scale? Elders? Dee shook out her fist, rubbing red knuckles with her other hand. Then Luce saw. The wooden door to the chapel was smashed in the center. Dee must have punched it. No one else thought it was remarkable that such a tiny woman could cause so much damage.
You all right there, Dee? Arion called out.
Sophia has no business here.
Her voice quaked with rage.
What Lucifer is doing is beyond the compass of the elder's concern. And yet she could ruin everything for you angels. I could kill her.
Promise? Roland asked.
Daniel slipped the starshot into the satchel and clasped it shut.
However this battle ended, it must have begun over the third relic. Someone found it.
A war of resources, Dee said.
Luce flinched.
And someone died for it.
We don't know what happened, Luce, Daniel said. And we won't know until we stand before the elders. We need to track them down. How? Roland asked.
Maybe they went to Sinai to stake us out, Annabelle suggested.
Daniel shook his head and paced.
They don't know to go to Sinai. Unless they tortured the location out of one of our angels.
He stopped and looked away.
No,
Dee said, looking around their circle on the bridge.
The elders have their own agenda. They are greedy. They want a larger stake in all of this. They want to be remembered, like their forefathers. If they die, they want to go as martyrs.
She paused.
And what is the most self-indulgent location to stage your own martyrdom?
The angels shifted their weight. Daniel scanned the pale pink western sky. Annabelle ran her long nails through her hair. Arion hugged her arms around her chest and stared hard at the ground, at a loss for sarcastic words. Luce seemed to be the only one who didn't know what Dee was talking about. Finally, Roland's voice echoed ominously across the crumbling bridge.
Golgotha. place of skulls.
11. Via Dolorosa. As the angels banked right over the southern coast of France, Luce watched the dark waves roll below them, washing up along the distant shore. She did some math in her head. At midnight, it would be Tuesday, December 1. 5 days had passed since she'd returned from the announcers, which meant that they were past the midpoint of the 9-day period over which the angels fell to Earth. Lucifer and all their earlier selves were more than halfway through the fall. They had 2 of the 3 relics, but they didn't know what the 3rd was, didn't know how to read them once they got them all together. Worse, in the process of locating the relics, they'd gained more enemies. And it looked like they'd lost their friends. Dust from the Pont Saint-Bénézé was under Luce's fingernails. What if it was Cam? In a handful of days, Luce had gone from being wary about Cam's involvement in their mission to feeling despondent at the thought of losing him. Cam was fierce and dark and unpredictable and intimidating, and not the guy that Luce was meant to be with, but that didn't mean she didn't care about him, didn't care for him in a certain way. And Gabby, the southern beauty who always knew the right thing to say and do. From the moment Luce met Gabby at Sword and Cross, the angel had done nothing but look out for her. Now, Luce wanted to look out for Gabby. Molly Zane had also gone to Avignon with Cam and Gabby. Luce had feared, then hated Molly. Until the other morning, when Luce had come in through the bedroom window at her parents' house to find Molly covering for her in bed. It was a solid favor. Even Callie liked spending time with Molly. Had the demon changed? Had Luce? The rhythmic beats of Daniel's wings across the starry sky lulled Luce into a deep state of relaxation, but she did not want to sleep. She wanted to focus on what might greet them when they arrived at Golgotha, to brace herself for what was coming. "What's on your mind?" Daniel asked. His voice was low and intimate in the frantic wind they were flying through. Annabelle and Arian flew in front of them and a little bit below. Their wings, dark silver and iridescent, spread wide over the green boot of Italy. Luce touched the silver locket around her neck. "I'm afraid." Daniel squeezed her tight.
"You are so brave, Luce."
"I feel stronger than I ever have before, and I'm proud of all the memories I can access on my own, especially if they can help us stop Lucifer." She paused, glancing down at her dusty fingernails. "But I'm still afraid of what we are flying toward now."
"I won't let Sophia get anywhere near you."
"It's not what she might do to me, Daniel. It's what she may have already done to people I care about. That bridge, all that dust."
"I hope as much as you do that Cam and Gabby and Molly are unharmed."
His wings gave one great beat, and Luce felt her body rise above a swollen rain cloud.
"But angels can die, Lucinda."
"I know that, Daniel."
"Of course you do. And you know how dangerous this is. Every angel who joins our struggle to stop Lucifer knows it, too. By joining us, they acknowledge that our mission is more important than any single angel's soul."
Luce closed her eyes. A single angel's soul. There it was again. The idea she'd first heard Arian speak about in the Vegas IHOP. One powerful angel to tip the scales. One choice to determine the outcome of a fight that had lasted for millennia. When she opened her eyes, the moon was bathed in soft white light as it rose over the dark landscape below. "The forces of heaven and hell," she began. "Are they really in balance against each other right now?" Daniel was quiet. She felt his chest rise against her and then fall. His wings beat a bit more swiftly, but he didn't answer. "You know," Luce pressed on,
The same number of demons on one side and the same number of angels on the other?
Wind whipped against her. Finally, Daniel said,
Yes, though it's not that simple. It's not a matter of 1,000 here versus 1,000 there. Different players matter more than others. The outcasts carry no weight. You heard Phil lamenting that. The scale are almost negligible, though you'd never know that from the way they carry on about their importance.
He paused.
One of the archangels? They are worth 1,000 lesser angels.
Is it still true that there's one important angel who is yet to choose a side?
A pause.
Yes, that is still true.
She'd already begged him to choose once, on the rooftop at Shoreline. They were in the middle of an argument, and the time hadn't been right. But their bond was stronger now. Surely if he knew how much she supported him, that she'd stand by him and love him, no matter what, it would help him finally make up his mind. What if you just went ahead and chose?
No.
But Daniel, you could stop this. You could tip the scales and no one else would have to die, and...
I mean, no. It's not that easy.
She heard him sigh, and knew, even without looking, the precise shade his eyes would be glowing now. A deep, wild, lupine violet.
It's not that easy anymore, he repeated.
Why not?
Because this present no longer matters. We're in a pocket of time that may cease to exist. So choosing now wouldn't mean a thing, not until this 9-day glitch is fixed. We still have to stop him. Either Lucifer gets his way and erases the past 5 or 6 millennia, and we all begin again.
Or we succeed, Luce said automatically.
If that happens, Daniel said, we'll reassess how the ranks are aligned.
20 feet below them, Arian was flying in slow, trance-like loop-the-loops, as if to pass the time. Annabelle flew into one of the rain showers that the angels usually avoided. She came out on the other side with her wings damp and her pink hair plastered to the sides of her face without even seeming to notice. Roland was somewhere behind them, probably deep in his own thoughts as he carried Dee in his arms. Everyone seemed weary, distracted.
But when we succeed, couldn't you...
Choose heaven, Daniel said. No, I made my choice a very long time ago, almost at the beginning.
But I thought...
I chose you, Lucinda.
Luce swept her hand over Daniel's as the tar-dark sea beneath them washed up onto a swath of desert. The landscape was far below, but it reminded her of the terrain around Sinai, rocky cliffs interrupted by the green scrub of an occasional tree. She didn't understand why Daniel had to choose between heaven and love. All she'd ever wanted was his love, but at what price? Was their love worth the erasure of the world and all its stories? Could Daniel have prevented this threat if he'd chosen heaven long before? And would he have returned there, where he belonged, had his love for Luce not led him astray? As if he were reading her mind, Daniel said,
We put our faith in love.
Roland caught up to them. His wings angled, and his body pivoted to face Daniel and Luce. In his arms, Dee's red hair was flying, and her cheeks were aglow. She gestured for the two of them to come close. Daniel's wings gave one full, graceful beat, and they shot through a cloud to hover at Roland and Dee's side. Roland whistled, and Arian and Annabelle doubled back, closing an iridescent circle in the dark sky.
It's nearly 4 o'clock in the morning in Jerusalem, Dee said. That means we can expect the majority of mortals to be asleep, or otherwise out of the way for perhaps another hour. If Sophia has your friends, she's probably planning... Well, we should hurry, dears.
You know where they'll be? Daniel asked.
Dee thought for a moment.
Before I defected from the elders, the plan was always to reconvene at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. It was built on the slope of Golgotha, in the Christian quarter of the old city. The group glided toward the hallowed ground. They were a column of glowing wings. The clear sky was navy, sprinkled with stars, and the white stones of distant buildings below shone an eerie, acid blue. Though the land seemed naturally dry, dusty, the earth was studded with thick palm trees and groves of olive trees. They swooped over the most expansive cemetery Luce had ever seen, built on a gradual slope facing the old city of Jerusalem. The city itself was dark and sleepy, tucked in moonlight and surrounded by a tall stone partition. The formidable dome of the Rock Mosque sat high on a hill, its golden dome gleaming even in darkness. It was at a distance from the rest of the crammed city, set off by long flights of stone stairs and tall gates at every entrance. Beyond the old walls, a few modern high-rise buildings cut out a distant skyline. But within the old city, the structures were much older, smaller, crafting a maze of narrow cobbled alleys best navigated by foot. They alighted on the rampart of a tall gate, marking the entrance to the city. "This is the new gate," Dee explained. "It's the closest entrance to the Christian quarter, where the church is." By the time they had filed down the worn stairs from the top of the gate, the angels had retracted their wings into their shoulders. The cobbled street narrowed as Dee brandished a small red plastic flashlight and led them onward toward the church. Most of the stone storefronts had been fitted with metal doors that slid up and down, like the door on Luce's parents' garage. The doors were all closed now, padlocked along the street through which Luce walked next to Daniel, holding his hand and hoping for the best. The deeper into the city they went, the more the buildings seemed to press in on either side of them. They passed under the striped tented awnings of empty Arab markets, under long stone arches and dim corridors. The air smelled like roasted lamb, then incense, then laundry soap. Azalea vines climbed the walls, searching for water. The neighborhood was silent, but for the angel's steps and a coyote yowling in the hills. They passed a shuttered laundromat, its sign posted in Arabic, then a flower shop with Hebrew stickers plastered across its windows. Everywhere Luce looked, narrow walkways forked off from the street, through an open wooden gate here, up a short flight of stairs there. Dee seemed to be counting the doorways they passed, wagging her finger as they walked. At one point, she snapped her fingers, ducked under a weathered wooden arch, turned a corner, and disappeared. Luce and the angels glanced at each other quickly, then followed her. Down several steps, around a damp and darkened corner, up a few more steps, and suddenly they were on the roof of another building, looking down at another cramped street. "There it is," Dee nodded grimly. The church towered over everything nearby. It was built of pale, smooth stones and stood easily 5 stories, taller at its pair of slender steeples. At its center, an enormous blue dome looked like a blanket of midnight sky wrapped around a stone. Giant bricks formed large arches along the facade, marking places for massive wooden doors on the first story and arched stained glass windows higher up. A ladder leaned on a brick ledge outside a 3rd-story window, reaching up for nothing. Portions of the church's facade were crumbling and black with age, while others looked recently restored. On either side, 2 long stone arms branched forward from the church, forming a border around a flat cobbled plaza. Just behind the church, a tall white minaret stabbed the sky. "Wow," Luce heard herself say, as she and the angels descended another surprising flight of stairs to enter the plaza. The angels approached the heavy double doors that towered over them, 40 feet high at least. They were painted green and flanked by three plain stone pillars on either side. Luce's eye was drawn to the ornate frieze between the doors and the arches above them, and above that, the gleaming golden cross puncturing the sky. The building was quiet, somber, alive with spiritual electricity.
"In we go, then," Dee said. "We can't go in there," Roland said, moving away from the church.
"Oh, yes," Dee said. "The incendiary business. You think you can't go in because it's a sanctuary of God."
"It's the sanctuary of God," Roland said. "I don't want to be the guy who takes this place down."
"Only it isn't a sanctuary of God," Dee said simply. "Quite the opposite. This is the place where Jesus suffered and died. Therefore, it has never been a sanctuary as far as the throne is concerned, and that's the only opinion that really matters. A sanctuary is a safe haven, a refuge from harm. Mortals step within these walls to pray, in their infinitely morbid way, but as far as your curse is concerned, you will not be affected." Dee paused. "Which is good, because Sophia and your friends are inside."
"How do you know?" Luce asked. She heard footsteps on stone on the east side of the courtyard.
Dee squinted down the narrow street. Daniel grabbed Luce's waist so swiftly she fell into him. Turning a corner beneath a street sign that read, "Via Dolorosa," two elderly nuns strained under the weight of a large wooden cross. They wore simple navy habits, thick, sensible sandals, and beaded rosaries around their necks. Luce relaxed at the sight of the old believers, whose average age seemed to be 85. She started to move toward the women, obeying an instinct to assist the elderly with a heavy load, but Daniel's grasp on Luce's waist did not loosen as the nuns approached the great doors of the church with excruciating slowness. It seemed impossible that the nuns would not have seen the group of angels 20 feet away. They were the only other souls in the plaza, but the struggling sisters never so much as glanced in the angels' direction.
"A little early for the Sisters of the Stations of the Cross to be out, isn't it?" Roland whispered to Daniel.
Dee straightened her skirt and pinned a rebellious strand of hair behind her ear.
"I had hoped it wouldn't come to this, but we'll simply have to kill them."
"What?" Luce glanced at one of the feeble, sun-weathered women. Her gray eyes sat like pebbles in the deep folds of her face.
"You want to kill those nuns?"
Dee frowned.
"Those aren't nuns, dear. They are elders, and they must be disposed of, or they will dispose of us."
"I'm disposed to say they already look disposed of."
Arian shifted her weight from side to side.
"Apparently, Jerusalem recycles."
Maybe Arian's voice found the nuns and startled them, or maybe they were waiting to arrive at precisely the right location, but at that moment, as they reached the church doors, they stopped and turned so that the long beam of their cross pointed across the plaza toward the angels like a cannon.
"Time, she is a-wasting, angels," Dee said through tight lips.
The pebble-eyed nun bared veiny gums of the angels and fumbled with something on the base of the beam. Daniel shoved the satchel into Luce's hands, then positioned her behind Dee. The older woman didn't cover Luce exactly. The top of her head came only as high as Luce's chin, but Luce got the idea and ducked. The angels unleashed their wings with brutish speed as they fanned out on both sides, Arian and Annabelle veering left, Roland and Daniel diving right. The giant cross was not a pilgrim's penitential burden. It was an enormous crossbow filled with star shots meant to kill everybody there. There was no time for this to register with Luce. One of the nuns released the first shot. It sizzled through the air, heading for Luce's face. The silver arrow grew larger in Luce's vision as it swirled closer in the air. Then Dee jumped.
The tiny woman spread her arms open wide. The starshot's dull tip collided with the center of her chest. Dee grunted as the arrow, harmless to mortals, Luce knew, glanced off her tiny body and clattered to the ground, leaving the trans-eternal sore but unharmed.
"Presidia, you fool!" Dee shouted at the nun, dragging the arrow backward with her high heel.
Luce leaned down to pick it up and slipped it inside the satchel.
"You know that won't hurt me. Now you've annoyed my friends."
She gestured broadly at the angels, darting forward to disarm the costumed elders.
"Stand down, defector," Presidia replied. "We require the girl. Surrender her and we will..."
But Presidia never finished. Arian was at the elder's back in a flash, brushing the veil from her head, taking her white hair in her fists.
"Because I respect my elders," Arian hissed through her clenched teeth, "I feel I must prevent them from embarrassing themselves."
Then she lifted off the ground, still holding Presidia by the hair. The elder kicked the air as if pedaling an invisible bicycle. Arian pivoted and slammed the old woman's body into the cornice of the church's facade with such force it left an indentation when she collapsed in a twisted heap, hands and legs sticking out at grisly angles. The other incognito elder had dropped the cannon cross and was trying to escape, running hard for an alley that opened into the opposite corner of the plaza. Annabelle took up the cross and became a javelin thrower, rearing back like a tightening coil, springing to release the heavy wooden tee. The cross arced through the air and speared the fleeing elder in her sloping spine. She fell forward and convulsed, impaled by the replica of an ancient instrument of execution. The courtyard fell quiet. Instinctively, everyone turned to look at Luce.
"She's okay," Dee called, raising Luce's hand in the air, as if the two of them had just won a relay race. "Daniel!"
Luce pointed at a flash of white, disappearing behind Daniel's back into the church. As the double doors slowly shut, an elderly monk they hadn't noticed could be heard ascending the staircase inside.
"Follow him!"
Dee shouted, stepping over Presidia's mangled corpse. Luce and Dee ran to catch up to the others. When they entered the church, it was dark and silent. Roland pointed toward a flight of stone steps in the corner. They opened into a small stone archway, which led to a longer staircase. The space was too cramped for the angels to spread their wings, so they picked their way up the steep steps as quickly as they could.
"The elder will lead us to Sophia," Daniel whispered,
as they ducked under the stone archway to the darkened staircase.
"If she has the others, if she has the relic..."
Dee laid a firm hand on Daniel's arm.
"She must not know of Luce's presence. You must prevent the elder from reaching Sophia."
Daniel's eyes flickered back at Luce, then up to Roland, who nodded swiftly, rocketing up the stairs as if he had run through old stone fortresses before. Barely 2 minutes later, he was waiting for them at the top of the cramped staircase. The elder lay dead on the floor, lips blue, eyes glassy and wet. Behind Roland, an open doorway curved sharply to the left. Someone on that landing was singing what sounded like a hymn. Luce shivered. Daniel motioned for them to stay back as he peered past the edge of the curved stairway. From where she stood, pressed against a stone wall, Luce could see a small portion of the chapel beyond the landing. The walls were painted with elaborate frescoes, lit by dozens of small tin lamps suspended by beaded chains from the vaulted ceiling. There was a small room with a mosaic of the crucifixion spanning the entire western wall. Beyond this was a row of highly decorated vaulted columns several feet wide, portioning off a second, larger chapel that was hard to see from here. Between the two chapels, a large gilded shrine to Mary was covered in flower bouquets and half-burned sacramental candles. Daniel cocked his head. A flash of red swished past one of the columns. A woman in a long scarlet robe. She was bending over an altar made from a great marble slab adorned with a white lace sheet. Something lay on that altar, but Luce could not tell what it was. The woman was frail but attractive, with short gray hair cut in a fashionable bob. Her robe was cinched at the waist with a colorful woven belt. She lit a candle at the front of the altar. The flowing sleeves of her robe slipped up her arms as she genuflected, exposing wrists adorned with stacks and stacks of pearl bracelets. Miss Sophia. Luce pushed off Daniel to climb one step higher, desperate for a better view. The wide columns obstructed the majority of the chapel, but when Daniel helped her go just a little farther up the stairs, she could see more. There were not one, but three altars in the room. Not one, but three scarlet-robed women, ritually lighting candles all around them. Luce didn't recognize the other two. Sophia looked older, more tired than she had behind her librarian's desk. Luce wondered briefly if it was because she had gone from surrounding herself with teenagers to running with beings who hadn't been teenagers in several hundred years. That night, Sophia's face was painted, lips like blood. The robe she wore was dusty and dark with rings of sweat. Hers had been the chanting voice. When she started up again, in a language that sounded like Latin but wasn't, Luce's whole body clenched. She remembered it. This was the ritual that Miss Sophia had performed on Luce the last night she'd been at Sword and Cross. Miss Sophia had been just about to murder her when Daniel came crashing through the ceiling. "Pass me the rope, Vivina," Miss Sophia said. They were so consumed with their dark ritual that they did not sense the angels crouched along the stairs outside the chapel. "Gabrielle looks a little too comfy. I'd like to bind her throat." "Gabby." "There is no more," Vivina said. "I had to double-bind Cambriel here. He was squirming." "Oh, he still is." "Oh, my God," Luce whispered. Cam and Gabby were there. She assumed the presence of a third robed lady meant Molly was there, too. "God has nothing to do with this," Dee said under her breath. "And Sophia is too crazy to know it." "Why are the fallen being so quiet?" Luce whispered. "Why don't they resist?"
"They must not realize that this place is not a sanctuary of God," Daniel said. "They must be in shock. I know I would be. And Sophia must be using it to her advantage. She knows they are worried that anything they do or say might make the church erupt into flames."
"I know how they feel," Luce whispered. "We have to stop her."
She started for the door, emboldened by the fresh memory of the elders they'd destroyed outside, by the power of the angels behind her, by Daniel's love, by the knowledge of the two relics they'd already discovered. But a hand clamped her shoulder, drawing her back into the corridor.
"All of you stay here," Dee whispered,
making eye contact with each of the angels to ensure they understood.
"If they see you, they will know Luce is with you. Wait here."
She pointed to the columns, thick enough for three angels to hide behind.
"I know how to handle my sister."
Without another word, Dee strode into the chapel, her heels slapping the black and white tile floor.
"I'd say you've been given quite enough rope, Sophia," Dee said. "Who's there?" Vivina yelped, startled in mid-genuflection.
Dee crossed her arms over her chest as she walked around the altars, clucking in mock disapproval of the elders' work.
"Very shoddy dressing. Leave it to Sophia to bring her B-game to a sacrifice with cosmic and eternal implications."
Luce was desperate to study the reaction on Miss Sophia's face, but Daniel held her back. There were a scraping sound, a melodramatic gasp, and a cruel, soft cackle.
Ah, yes, Miss Sophia said. My tramp sister returns, just in time to witness my finest hour. This will trump your overrated piano recital.
You're really very dumb.
Because I don't have the recommended brand of rope? Sophia snorted.
Forget the rope, dope, Dee said. You were dumb in many dozens of ways, not the least of which is thinking you might get away with this.
Do not condescend to her, hissed the third elder.
There's really no other way to approach her, Dee instantly replied.
Thank you, Lyrica, but I can handle Paulina, Sophia said, without looking away from Dee.
Or what do you have people call you now?
P?
You know very well it is Dee. You only wish you knew why.
Ah, yes, Dee. Big difference. Well, let us enjoy our brief reunion as best we can.
Let them go, Sophia.
Let them go, Sophia cackled.
But I want them dead. Her voice rose, and Luce pictured her hand sweeping over the angels bound upon the altars.
I want her dead, most of all.
Luce couldn't even gasp. She knew whom the librarian meant.
It won't stop Lucifer from erasing your existence.
Dee's voice sounded almost sad.
Well, you know what Daddy always used to say. We're all hell-bound anyway. Might as well try to get what we want while we're on this earth. Where is she, Dee? Sophia spat. Where is the mewling child, Lucinda?
I wouldn't know. Dee's voice was smooth. But I have come to keep you from finding out. Now Daniel let Luce press a little closer to the first chapel's entrance.
I hate you, Sophia shouted, pouncing on Dee.
Roland turned to look at Daniel, asking with his eyes if they should interfere. Daniel seemed confident in the desideratum's abilities. He shook his head once. Sophia's assistant elders watched from their altars as the two sisters rolled across the floor, moving out of, then back into Luce's view. Dee on top, then Sophia, then Dee on top again. Dee's hands found Sophia's neck and squeezed. The old sword and cross librarian's face glowed red as her hand strained against Dee's chest, and she struggled to survive. Slowly, Sophia worked her knee up until it pressed deeply into her sister's stomach to push her back. Dee's arms were fully extended, reaching to keep their hold on Sophia's neck. She gazed down at her sister's rage-distorted face, her eyes on fire with hatred.
Your heart turned black, Sophia, Dee said, her voice soft with something like nostalgia. It was like a light went off. No one could turn the light back on. We could only try to stop you from running over us in the dark.
Then she released Sophia, allowed her to draw a huge and panicked breath into her lungs.
You betrayed me, Sophia gasped, as Dee took her sister's collar in her hands, closed her eyes, and moved to slam Sophia's skull against the tiles of the mosaic floor.
But instead, there came a long shriek as Dee was launched into the air. Sophia had kicked her with a force Luce had forgotten the old woman possessed. She leaped to her feet. She was sweating and red in the face, her hair white and wild, as she ran to where Dee had come to rest several feet away. Luce rose on her toes and winced when she saw Dee's eyes were closed.
Ha!
Sophia returned to the altars and reached beneath the one binding Cam. She pulled out a sheath of starshots. Back in the alcove, Roland glanced at Daniel again. This time, Daniel nodded. In an instant, Arian, Annabelle, and Roland flew from their hiding places into the room. Roland drove toward Miss Sophia, but at the last instant, she ducked and deftly avoided him. His wings slapped her across the face, but she had eluded his grasp.
In the face of angel wings, the two other elders cowered, shrinking in panicked fear. Annabelle held them back while Arian flicked open a Swiss army knife from her pocket. The pink one, the same one Lucid used to cut the girl's hair months earlier, and sawed at the ropes binding Gabby to the altar.
"Stop, or I'll kill him!" Sophia shouted at the angels as she tore out a fistful of arrows and leaped on Cam. Straddling him, she raised the silver shafts above his head. His dark hair was matted and greasy. His hands were pale and trembling. Miss Sophia studied these details with a smirk.
"I do so love to see an angel die!"
She cackled, holding the star shots high.
"And such an arrogant one to kill."
She looked back down at Cam.
"His death will be a beautiful thing to behold."
"Go ahead."
Cam's voice came for the first time, low and even. Luce nearly cried out when she heard him mutter,
"I never asked for a happy ending."
Luce had watched Sophia kill Penn with her bare hands, and no remorse. It would not happen again.
"No!"
Luce shouted, struggling to break free from Daniel's grip and dragging him with her into the chapel. Slowly, Miss Sophia craned her body around toward Luce and Daniel, clutching her fistful of star shots. Her eyes gleamed silver, and her thin lips curled in a ghastly smile as Luce tugged Daniel forward, pulling against his relentless grip.
"We have to stop her, Daniel!"
"No, Luce, it's too dangerous."
"Oh, there you are, dear," Miss Sophia beamed. "And Daniel Grigori, how nice. I've been waiting for you."
Then she winked and whipped the star shots over her head in a dense cluster, aimed straight at Daniel and Luce. 12. Unholy Water. It happened in the broken fraction of a second. Roland tackled Miss Sophia, knocking her to the ground, but he was half a heartbeat too late. 5 silver star shots sailed silently across the empty space of the chapel. The cluster of them loosened as they flew, seeming to hang in mid-air for a moment on their path toward Luce and Daniel.
"Daniel."
Luce pressed herself back against Daniel's chest. He had the opposite instinct. His arms pulled tight against her and dragged her down hard against the floor. 2 great pairs of wings crossed the space in front of Luce, erupting from left and right. One was a radiant coppery gold, the other the purest silvery white. They filled the air before her and Daniel like enormous feathered screens, and then were gone in the blink of an eye. Something whizzed by her left ear. She turned and saw a single star shot ricochet off the gray stone wall and clatter to the floor. The other star shots were gone. A fine, iridescent grit settled around Luce. Squinting through the mist of dust, she took in the room. Daniel, crouching beside her. Aroused Dee, struggling atop a writhing Miss Sophia. Annabelle, standing above the other elders, who lay lifeless on the floor. Arian, holding an empty length of rope and her Swiss army knife in trembling hands. Cam, still bound on the altar, stunned. Gabby and Molly, just freed from their altars by Arian, disappeared. And Luce's and Daniel's bodies covered in a film of dust.
No.
Gabby! Molly!
Luce got to her knees. She held out her hands, examining them as if she'd never seen hands before. Candlelight played off her skin, turning the dust to soft, shimmery gold, then a bright, glittering silver as she flipped her hands to gaze at her palms.
"No, no, 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 no!"
She looked back, locking eyes with Daniel. His face was ashen, his eyes burning with such a concentrated violet, it was hard to hold their gaze. that became harder still when her vision blurred with tears.
Why did they...
For a moment, everything was still. Then an animal's roar rent the room. Cam forced his right leg free from the ropes that had bound it, ripping his ankle raw in the process. He strained to free his wrists, bellowed as he tore his right hand loose from his bonds, shredding the wing that had been pinned with an iron post and dislocating his shoulder. His arm swung in a gruesomely distended way from his shoulder, as if it had nearly been ripped off. He leaped from the altar onto Sophia, pushing Dee aside. The force knocked all three of them to the ground. Cam landed on top of Sophia, pinning her on her side, seeking to crush her with his weight. She let out a tortured howl, pulled her arms weakly before her face as Cam's hands reached for her neck.
"Strangling is the most intimate way to kill someone," Cam said, as if teaching Violence 101. "Now, let's see the beauty of your death."
But Miss Sophia's struggle was ugly. Gargles and grunts bubbled from her throat. Cam's fingers tightened, slammed her head with brutal thumps against the floor, again and again and again. Blood began to trickle from the old woman's mouth, darker than her lipstick. Daniel's hand touched Luce's chin, turned her to face him. He gripped her shoulders. They locked eyes again, searching for a way to tune out Sophia's wet groans.
"Gabby and Molly knew what they were doing," Daniel whispered.
"They knew they were going to be killed," Luce said.
Behind them, Sophia whimpered, sounding almost like she'd accepted that this was how she'd die.
"They knew that stopping Lucifer is more important than an individual life," Daniel said. "More than anything else that has happened, let this convince you of how urgent our task is here."
The silence around them was loud. No more bloody coughs came from Miss Sophia. Luce didn't have to look to know what it meant. An arm encircled her waist. A familiar mop of black hair rested on her shoulder.
"Come on," Arian said. "Let's get you two cleaned up."
Daniel handed Luce over to Arian and Annabelle.
"You girls go ahead."
Luce followed the angels numbly. They walked Luce to the back of the chapel, opening several closets until they found what they were looking for, a small black lacquered door that opened onto a circular, windowless room. Annabelle lit a candelabra on a tiled table near the door, then lit another one in a stone alcove. The red brick room was the size of a large pantry and had no furniture but a raised eight-sided baptismal bath. Inside, the bath was made with green and blue mosaics. Outside, it was marble carved with a wraparound frieze of angels descending to earth. Luce felt miserable and dead inside. Even the baptismal pool seemed to mock her. Here she was, the girl whose cursed soul was somehow important, up for grabs because she'd never been baptized as a child, about to wash away the dust of two dead angels. Was saving Luce and Daniel worth their souls? How could it be? This baptism broke Luce's already broken heart a little more.
"Don't worry," Arian said, reading her mind. "This won't count."
Annabelle found a sink in the corner of the room, behind the baptismal font. She poured bucket after large wooden bucket of steaming hot water into the tub. Arian stood next to Luce, not looking at her, just holding her hand. When the bath was full and refracting a deep blue-green from the tiles, Annabelle and Arian hoisted Luce above the surface of the water. She was still wearing her sweater and jeans. They hadn't thought to undress her, but then they noticed her boots.
"Whoops," Annabelle said softly, unzipping them one at a time and tossing them aside.
Arian lifted the silver locket over Luce's head and slipped it inside a boot. Their wings fluttered as they lifted off the ground to lower Luce into the warm water. Luce closed her eyes, slipped her head beneath the water, stayed a while. If she shed a tear, she wouldn't feel it if she stayed submerged. She didn't want to feel. It was like Penn had died all over again, fresh pain exposing old pain that still felt fresh to Luce. After what seemed like a long time, she felt hands slip under her arms to pull her upright in the bath. The surface of the water was a film of gray dust. It didn't shimmer anymore. Luce didn't take her eyes off it until Annabelle started tugging her sweater up over her head. She felt it lift off her, followed by the t-shirt she'd been wearing underneath. She fumbled with a button on her jeans. How many days had she worn these clothes? It was strange to be free of them, like slipping off a layer of skin and looking at it on the floor. She ran a hand through her wet hair to wipe it from her face. She hadn't realized how grimy it was. Then she sat on the bench at the back of the tub, leaned against the side, and started shivering. Annabelle added more hot water to the pool, but it did nothing to stop Luce's tremors. If I'd just stayed out in the hallway, like Dee told me to, then Cam would be dead, Arian said. Or someone else. Sophia and her clan were going to make dust one way or another tonight. The rest of us knew that going into this, but you didn't. She sighed. So coming out and trying to save Cam, that took serious guts, Luce. But Gabby knew what she was doing. That's what Daniel said. But why would she sacrifice herself to save? Because she's gambling on Daniel and you and the rest of us succeeding. Arian rested her chin and her arm on the edge of the tub. She trailed a finger in the water, breaking up the dust. But knowing that doesn't make it any easier. We all loved her very much. She can't really be gone. She is gone. Gone from the highest altar in creation. What? That wasn't what Luce meant. She meant that Gabby was her friend. Arian's brow furrowed. Gabby was the highest of the archangels. You didn't know? Her soul was worth, I don't even know how many others. It was worth a lot. Luce had never before considered how her friends were ranked in heaven, but now she thought about the times Gabby had looked out for her, taken care of her, brought her food or clothes or advice. She'd been Luce's kind, celestial mother. What does her death mean? Way back when, Lucifer was ranked first, Annabelle said. After a pause, she glanced at Luce, registered her shock. He was right there, next to all the action. Then he rebelled, and Gabby moved up. Though being ranked next to the throne is a mixed blessing, Arian murmured. Ask your buddy, old pal Bill. Luce wanted to ask who came after Gabby, but something stopped her. Maybe it had once been Daniel, but his place in heaven was in jeopardy because he kept on choosing Luce. What about Molly? Luce finally asked. Does her death cancel out Gabby's? In terms of the balance between heaven and hell? She felt callous talking about her friends as commodities, but she also knew, right now, the answer mattered. Molly was important, too, though a little lower in the ranks, Annabelle said. This was before the fall, of course, when she sided with Lucifer's host. I know we are not supposed to speak ill of the dusted, but Molly really used to bug me. So much negativity. Luce nodded guiltily. But something changed in her recently. It's like she woke up. She glanced at Luce. To answer your question, the balance between heaven and hell can still be struck. We'll just have to see how things play out. A lot of things that matter now become irrelevant if Lucifer succeeds. Luce looked toward Arian, who disappeared behind the door and sneezed 3 times in a row. Hello, mothballs! When she emerged, she was holding a white towel and an oversized checked bathrobe. It'll have to do for now.
We'll find you a change of clothes before we leave Jerusalem.
When Luce didn't move from the tub, Arian clucked her tongue like she was coaxing a horse out of its stable and held the towel out for Luce to step into. She stood up, feeling like a kid, as Arian engulfed her in the towel and dried her off. The towel was thin and coarse, but the robe that followed was thick and warm.